Mr. Toby, and Mrs. Bassett, Miss Smith, and her son, Mr. Spencer, and I are sitting in a pleasant living room in a very old house in Chathamport. The house belongs to Miss Smith, and I have just been in to see her, what she calls her 1850s living room. It is a charming recreation of a very fine living room, as it must have looked in those days. The beautiful big piano, lovely old furniture, warm and glowing with care, pictures on the wall that are charming, lovely old lace curtains. The room is just really a museum piece. It is something that Miss Smith has done from love of her old home, and it's very pleasant for us to see it and be here. We came over tonight to talk to Miss Smith and to Mrs. Bassett about Chathamport and the way it was in the old days. And Miss Smith, we're delighted to have you tell us about it.
Thank you. Mrs. Mae Bassett and I have been asked to tell you something about Chathamport of former days. And we are the only persons, with the exception of Ralph Ryder, who lives on Crowell Road, who grew up here and can remember what Chathamport was like more than 50 years ago. Chathamport includes the land bordering Pleasant Bay, Close Pond, and Ryder's Cove, and the land between Muddy Cove and Queen Anne's Road to the old cemetery, then across the top of Great Hill to the Stepping Stone Creek, where the Acme Laundry is now. This section of the town was called the port, instead of some point of the compass, as is usual in the Cape Towns, because in early days the opening through the outer beach, which we call the bar, was opposite Pleasant Bay, and this was the harbor for shipping. The first settler, William Nickerson, located here, and this was the center of the town. But when the entrance to Pleasant Bay became too shallow for vessels to come in, and Stage Harbor became the port for shipping, Chatham Village became the center of the town. Around 40 families were living in Chathamport when I was a girl. Those north of Ryder's Cove were said to be in the upper neighborhood, those south of the cove in the lower neighborhood. These families all were acquainted with each other, and in times of trouble, sickness, or death, were ready to help in any way that they could. Practically all the land, which is now the new development called Eastwood Point, Camp Avalon, the Eastwood Ho Golf Club and Harbor Cove, was owned by the Nickersons. Eastwood Point was the farm of Uncle Jesse and Aunt Becky Nickerson, then referred to as Jesse's Neck. The titles uncle and aunt did not mean a relative, but a friendly form of address given to elderly people by the younger ones. Uncle Jesse was not what one would call a prosperous farmer, but he made a living for himself and his family. The farmers of those days did not require a large investment or a large income. They raised their own vegetables, cut enough hay to feed their stock, which in turn provided them with milk, butter, and beef. They raised corn to feed the hens and pigs, which provided them with eggs and all pork products. They sold milk for 5 cents a quart, eggs for 15 cents a dozen, and butter for 20 or 25 cents a pound. They sold it to the neighbors and who were not farmers, or to the grocer in exchange for groceries. My mother sold potato yeast for making bread for 2 cents a cup. Rhubarb and vegetables were given away. People would come to get some little thing and then ask if they should have rhubarb. So I would have to climb over the fence and go to and get rhubarb for them, and of course they expected to have it given them. Within in my remembrance, there was no general store in Chathamport. The grocer came from East Harwich once a week to take orders one day and deliver them the next. The butcher cock came from Orleans once a week. After the railroad came to Chatham in 1887, changes began to take place. A few people came from Boston and other cities to spend the summer, and two or three people in the town kept boarders. Several men from Boston who had large interests in the old colony railroad and the American Express, admiring the marvelous view from what is now the third tee on the Eastwood Ho golf links, conceived the idea of building a hotel on this site that would surpass anything on the Cape for elegance. And so Hotel Chatham was built and opened in 1890. It was really par excellence as a resort hotel, with about 75 rooms for guests, broad verandas, a bandstand, billiard room, ballroom, an orchestra, all colored servants, a special railroad stop in West Chatham where the airport is now, and transportation to the hotel. All this for around $4 a day, American plan. The natives were quite overwhelmed to have anything like this in their midst, and some of them made a practice of going to the hotel on Saturday nights to sit on the veranda and look in the windows to see the dancing and hear the music. There was a stable in connection with the hotel, with a fine string of horses and all kinds of fancy rigs, phaetons, buckboards, surreys. But where could the guests go over the sandy, rutted road? No gift shop, no movies, no golf links. To lie on the beach in an abbreviated costume to get a suntan would have been a shocking, unheard-of thing. In those days, women wore sunbonnets with deep capes and stocking legs on their arms when they went out to hang the clothes for fear they might get a tan. The guests couldn't sit on the veranda and look at the view all day and day after day. So after four seasons, Hotel Chatham was closed and eventually torn down. It was ahead of the time. Many years later, the land was purchased as a part of the Eastwood Ho golf link. The next thing that happened on Death's Neck was the building of a naval air station. At the beginning of the First World War, the United States government erected an immense dirigible house and several seaplane houses, also barracks for the servicemen as a coastal protection. This was all abandoned after the war. The foundations are still there, and a housing development called Eastwood Point is being promoted. One of the Nickersons from this area, Samuel Nickerson, went to Chicago in its early days and became a man of wealth, so that his relatives in Chathamport could live very comfortably without much manual labor. Where the Eastwood Ho caddy camp is now was Ensign Nickerson's house, a brother of Samuel. I think he died before I was born, but his sisters, Sally Ann and Josephine, lived in one half of the house, and Edward Kendrick and his wife Matty lived in the other half to take care of the place. At the top of the hill is a big square-topped house where Osborne Nickerson lived, one of the relatives. The Chathamport post office was here. There were five houses in Chathamport which we call square tops. I think they are peculiar to this section of the town. The Lumbert Nickerson house, which was in the valley below Hotel Chatham and torn down when the hotel was built. The Osborne Nickerson house, the house on Crow's Pond where General Clay now lives, the Christopher Ryder house, and the house on Crower Road where Ralph Ryder lived, once owned by Squire B. The first floor of these houses is arranged the same as all the double Cape Cod houses, but These two, but there are two stories instead of one and a half, and four slants to the roof instead of two. The house on the corner of Orleans Road and Fox Hill Road was the home of Arik Nickerson, a brother of Samuel and the father of Osborne. He and his wife Mercy were spiritualists, as were Jesse and Becky Nickerson. I can recall that there were three houses on the peninsula between Crow's Pond and Ryder's Cove, which is now Harbor Cove. In them lived the Birchall family, the Tripp family, and Uncle Thaddeus Bassett and his wife. About 1900, Fisher Eldridge bought the whole area for a farm. This was carried on until his death, and then given up. The three houses were either moved away or torn down. Roads used to be designated by the people who lived on them. The Queen Anne Road was an exception. This was the old road between Harwich and Chatham, and must have been used in the early 1700s, as Queen Anne ruled from 1702 to 1714. Some of the roads have been recently named, and very aptly so. Old Cummers Road and Training Field Road as examples. Old Cummers refers to the first settlers who came over in the Mayflower. Investors, who were then called adventurers, financed the expedition, and in order to reimburse them, the settlers, referred to as Old Cummers, had to give all their earnings outside of the bare necessities to the adventurers for the first 7 years. This road extends from Queen Anne Road to the Orleans Road near the boatyard. The training field was in the triangle between Queen Anne, Old Cummers, and Training Field Road. At the time of the French and Indian Wars, King Philip's War, and the Revolutionary War, every man between 16 and 60 was trained at frequent intervals to handle firearms. This road extends from Queen Anne Road to the Orleans Road in another direction from Old Cummers Road. Another place of historic interest is the wading place between Chatham Port and East Harwich. The road leading to it from the Chatham Port side was just south of Mrs. Robertson's house on Training Field Road. Geneva Eldridge has written a very interesting account of this in a recent edition of the Cape Codder. May I read it? Where Long Cove in East Harwich empties into Pleasant Bay, at head of the bay near the residence of Joshua A. Nickerson, is the old-time wading place. Here, at low tide, both Indian and white men could easily wade from shore to shore to visit friends and relatives in the various neighborhoods nearby. Otherwise, the trip must be made by ox team or on foot by way of Queen Anne's Road, which would take several hours. As the population grew in the two towns, the need of a bridge of some kind became imperative, and one was built which was always known as Wading Place Bridge from then on. I do not know the date of the first bridge, but the one I remember back in the 80s was an old wooden structure built with tall spiles crisscrossed and topped by heavy planking wide enough for teams to pass easily, and with a stout railing on each side. I can remember that bridge. After many years of horse-drawn vehicles clopping across the loosely laid planking, the old bridge became unsafe for travel and beyond repair. So in 1894, it was torn down, and tide gates that controlled the water's ebb and flow was installed in a wide causeway where the wooden bridge had been. This now has become a paved highway of busy traffic both night and day. No one gives a thought to the days when it was the wading place and could be forded only at low tide. When I was a girl, there were three houses on Training Field Road. The house on the east side of the road was Joshua Ryder's, and almost opposite was the house and farm of Rupert Smith, my father. Beyond the four corners where Old Cummers Road crosses, was the house and farm of Samuel Clifford. That house has been moved away, and its location is marked by a dense growth of silver leaf trees. My father acquired during his life a large portion of the land in Travancore. What we call the Big Field extended from the Orleans Road to East Howitt, about 400 acres. This was fenced in with a post and rail fence, and there was much more grazing land than now. Young cattle from surrounding towns were brought here in May and left until October. There being two ponds in the field, called the Spectacle Pond, these young cattle needed no care for the summer. By October, they became rather wild, and there was much excitement on the day that the owners came for them. Another field extended from Training Field Road to Stillwater Pond. The Stillwater development is a part of it. The land on which the Radio Corporation is situated was his, as well as the northern half of Great Hill. My father always had other interests besides his farm. In Civil War days, he drove a four-horse coach between Chatham and Yarmouth, which was the end of the old colony railroad line. At one time, he had a store in Harwich. He was part owner with his brother David Smith of an ice refrigeration plant in Washington. In his later years, he had about 16 acres of cranberry swamps in various places in Chatham. By the side of the road on Training Field Road is a white headstone. This was put there by the Historical Society. I'm not sure that they paid for it. I think perhaps the town did that. But it was through the efforts of the Historical Society. This was there to replace the old headstone that strangely disappeared. Here is the grave of Dr. Samuel Lord, who died of smallpox in 1765. 37 died in this frightful epidemic. Just beyond the Four Corners on Old Commerce Road, and a short distance back from the road, is a small fenced-in graveyard. Here are buried a number of the smallpox victims, among them my great-great-great-grandfather, Deacon Stephen Smith, his wife Bathsheba, and two of his daughters. Turning left on Old Commerce Road, one comes to two ponds with a roadway between them. Today they are called Stillwater Pond and Lover's Lake. I knew them as the North Pond and the South Pond, and the William Smith History calls them Pasture Pond and Nespoxit Pond. I like those names better. Between the ponds are two houses still owned and occupied by descendants of the Smith family that have lived and owned property in Chatham for 9 generations. The first purchase of land from the Indians was in 1690 by Samuel Smith for his son John. On the top of the hill, where there are several dwelling houses belonging to the Radio Corporation, was the one-room schoolhouse where I first went to school. There were never more than 10 or 12 pupils, and there were 6 grades. When it was our turn to recite, we came forward to a settee in the front of the room. The rest of the time, we pretty much amused ourselves. Our teachers were high school graduates with no teacher training, but we learned to read and write, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The best part of the day was the noon hour, when our playground was all the fields and woods in every direction. There was no superintendent. One of the school committee would visit occasionally and ask us a few questions or make a speech. I remember one of them saying to us, "Scholar, be very careful of your pronunciation." When we had finished the 6th grade, we went to town for grammar at high school and walked the 3 miles to town and back unless someone gave us a ride. It wasn't a hardship. In fact, we enjoyed it. I remember only the names of the families that lived in what we called the lower neighborhood. Along the Orleans Road, Route 28 on the left, were the houses of David Crowell, Stillman Nickerson, Deacon Rogers, Rebecca Kent, and Fred Allen. On the right, Joseph Young. On Crowell Road lived Joshua Crowell and his mother in a house that has since been moved away. Then George Henry Nickerson, his grandson George Nickerson, lives there now. Kimball Ryder in the Squire B house. Samuel Young, James Young, and Mariah Luke. If you're acquainted with this section, you will know that several houses have been built in the last 50 years. Mamie Bassett knows much more about the Ryder family and the Bassett family at the head of the cove than I do, and also about the fishing industry. And I'm going to turn the records over to her.
Oh,
my father, Joshua Ryder, went to sea at the advanced age of 11. After marriage to my mother persuaded him to leave the steamer Kensington, which went from Boston to New Orleans. She didn't like to have him go so long. So he bought a catboat and went fishing. He had a fish house, shanty, it was called then. As a child, it was my great pleasure to watch the boat sail up Ryder's Cove. There were no engines in them. There were 10 in the cove at that time. A good fish could be bought at the shore for 10 cents. All the fish was dressed and split and salted in butts, hug this, really. There was a natural spring near my father's fish house where I used to watch his fish in the fresh water, usually mostly codfish. It was a favorite. After they had been in the salt the required time, they were again washed and dried on wire flakes. They were called flakes. On posts, they could be tipped to dry better. After they were dry, they were sold by the kettle.
Where was that? Can you tell us just where that is?
Down on Alice's land, the end of Alice, Mr. Smith's land, where the old road joins 28. Down just to the head of the cove there.
Now it would be almost across from the Christopher Ryder house?
A little further down.
A little further down on the right.
Yes, there was an old road that came up, mm-hmm. And it was right there.
Well, your father was one of how many Ryders?
9 children. His father was John Ryder. They had 5 boys and 4 girls.
Tell me, I've heard tell of an old peppermint spring around here. Do you remember that?
That's over here.
Well, you know where it is.
Stillwater, isn't it?
And I suppose the peppermint grew around it. It sounds lovely, doesn't it?
Peppermint grew very luxuriantly around here. Around the John Ryder place, they had peppermint and hops and all the old herbs.
Now, whose house are you living in now? Was that a Ryder house?
Yeah, I was a Ryder originally. And then the next house was Christopher Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next house was Kimball's, Captain Kimball Ryder, who was later bought by the Bassett. And that included the Burial Hill property. And then across the brook was John Ryder.
Did you go to the same school as Miss Smith?
Yes.
Do you remember the small schoolhouse?
Yes, very well.
Did you ever have parties?
Yes, we had little birthday parties.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about them? I'd love to hear about it.
Well, they weren't very elaborate. We just had them. We usually played games, little guessing games in the daylight,
mm-hmm.
Daytime. And sometimes we had ice cream and cake just to brighten it in. We didn't have ice cream every day like we do now.
Tell me about your mother's and father's parties, the parties they'd have.
Well, I don't remember that they had many parties. They were rather quiet people.
Mm-hmm. Was there much community activity around, or did you just visit back and forth?
They had a circle in the neighborhood, and it was a little hall, but there wasn't the amount of amusements, of course, that there is now. Miss Smith told you there was no movies. And
what do you most remember about Chatham-Port when you were a girl?
Well, I liked to watch the boats when they came up, and I used to go to the shore when it was time for the boats to land. We'd see them coming, and we'd go to the shore and wait on the shore to see them. We all enjoyed that.
Was it quiet?
Very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
The
It's just about as near perfection as it could be. We thought.
I think so, too. Tell me, what was this all farmland then, all around here? I know
most of the land was mowed for hay for the horses and cows. Most everyone. We had a horse. My father had a horse and bed and buggy, a Canadian horse at first. And then afterward, we had a two-seat with a car with a fringe on, sorry, with a fringe on top.
What was the, what was Scrabble Town Village? I picked that up somewhere.
Well, we used to call the other neighborhood, the lower neighborhood, sometimes. We used to call them Scrabble Town, and they used to call us Head of the Harbor.
You know why?
No, I don't.
Do you know, Miss Smith?
No, I don't.
We'll find that out sometime. It has always seemed to me that people who live here remember it with such warm affection. It must have been a tranquil, quiet life.
It was. And we used to go berrying in the summer. Mm-hmm. Blackberrying and blueberrying. And then later on, we went cranberrying. Cranberry was the only thing that we could make any money when I was going to school.
Yeah.
We used to try to make enough to buy us a new outfit in the fall.
Did you have gardens the way they have now?
Well, most everyone had a garden. My father didn't have a very large one, but he usually raised enough of beans and potatoes and to last us through the winter.
What about flowers?
Yes, we had dahlias, and we had a big daddy garden usually. We had a few hens, very few.
Well, how long have you lived here, Mrs. Baxter?
95.
My goodness, that's a long time.
I hope I'll always live here.
Well, can you tell us any of the, what do you think are the biggest changes that have happened? Is it building houses, or is it roads, or is it people?
I think it's people, yes. And the change of the rider place is quite a change. Well, Mr. Ryder lived there alone as I was all my younger days. She was a very nice lady.
Yeah.
She was the last of the Ryder family.
Is she the one who had a store?
Yes.
Tell us about the store.
Well, she had a little store. There wasn't very much too much in it. Her father had the store originally.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very, very smart woman in her day. But she lived alone. She was very deaf, but she never seemed to be frightened.
Mm-hmm. What did she sell?
A little candy and peppermints. And the story goes she'd bite a peppermint in two to make weight. No, I didn't see her do it.
Well, did you ever go out fishing with your father?
Not over the bar. I wasn't allowed to, but I used to go fish what we call down the channel, this side of the bar. Mm-hmm. We'd go sailing.
Mm-hmm.
Women didn't fish much in those days. Mm-hmm. We went sailing a lot. We used to be sailing.
Did you have to help him fix the fish, for salt, and cure it?
No. The women didn't do much work in those days out that line.
Mm-hmm.
As I remember, my mother never did, but
she might have been pretty busy at home.
No, but women didn't work outside the home like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rather a hard job. They brought these fish ashore, you know, and they had a table that they split them on, and then they had to be washed. It was rather hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Then they saved the liver.
Mm-hmm.
They were put in a tub separate, and that made the cod liver oil.
Thank you, Mrs. Bassett. This has been a wonderful experience tonight to hear you and Miss Smith, our hostess, talk about the old days of Chathamport. Ever so grateful to you. The members of the Historical Society in Chatham are greatly in your debt. Good night.